Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavan api Bharata tat upani tarana.
Upanishads. And it's coming close to the guru for instructions. Arhanaha. Worshipful paraphernalia. Shukta. According to Vedic etiquette. Vakena. By language. Or that can be by speech also. Akitaram. Highly. Udita, praise, gunaganas, qualities, avatara,
because of the descent,
sujaya, whose glories,
priyavatam,
anupriyavata,
adipurushaha,
the original person, tam, and him, Sadaya,
with compassion.
Asa, smiling. Avalokaha, who is looking up?
Who is looking? Iti.
Thus. Ha.
Certainly.
Uvacha.
Say.
My dear King Bridget, because Lord Brahma had finally descended from such a loka to Bhumloka, Narayani, Prince Priyavrata, and Swami Ramana came forward to offer him objects of worship and to praise him in highly qualified language, according to Vedic etiquette. At that time, Lord Ramana, the original person of this universe, felt compassion for Priyavrata, and looking upon him with a smiling face, spoke to him as follows. Okay. That Lord Brahma descended from such a loka to see Priyavrata indicates that the matter was very serious. Narayana had come to advise Priyavrata about the value of spiritual life, knowledge, renunciation, and bhakti. And Lord Brahma knew that Narayana's instructions were very impressive. Therefore, unless Lord Brahma personally went to Gandharva Hill to request Priyavrata, Lord Brahma knew that Prince Priyavrata would not accept his father's order. Brahma's purpose was to break Priyavrata's determination. Therefore, Brahma first looked upon Priyavrata with compassion. His smile and compassionate features also indicated that although Brahma would request Priyavrata to accept household life, Priyavrata would not be out of touch with devotional service. By the blessings of a Vaishnava, everything is possible. This is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as Kripa Siddhi, or perfection attained simply by the blessings of a superior person. One usually becomes liberated and perfect by executing the regulated principles set down in the Shastras. Nonetheless, many persons have achieved perfection simply by the blessings of a spiritual master or superior. Priyavrata was the grandson of Lord Brahma. And as joking competition sometimes takes place between grandson and grandfather, in this case, also Priyavrata was determined to remain in meditation, whereas Brahma was determined that he ruled the universe. What's that called? What's that called? This relationship between Priyavrata and Lord Brahma, what's that called?
I think great great grandson.
Huh?
I think he's a great great grandson. Right?
Yeah. But Brahma wants him to do one thing and he wants to do another. What's that called? Conflict. Conflict. Thus, Lord Brahma's affectionate smile and glance meant, my dear Priyavrata, you have decided not to accept household life, but I have decided to convince you that you must accept it. Actually, Brahma had come to praise Priyavrata for his high standard of renunciation, austerity, penance, and devotion, so that he would not be deviated from devotional service, even though he would accept household life. In this verse, one important word is shukta vakina. Which is translated here as language according to Vedic etiquette. Shukta Vakina. Shukta being according to Vedic etiquette, and Vakina by language or speech. So Udita, praise. Atita Ram, highly. In this verse, one important, In this verse, one important word is sutta vakena, by Vedic hymns. In the Vedas, there is the following prayer to Lord Brahma: Hiranyagarbha samavartata vedi utasya jata patir eka asit. Brahma was received with the appropriate Vedic hymns, and because he was welcome to call him Vedic etiquette, he was very pleased.
King Parikshit's inquiry from Sukadev Goswami. And his inquiry is in relationship to how was was a self-realized personality, and along with self-realization comes knowledge, and with knowledge, renunciation. He was fixed in his meditation, and he was very renounced. So, Maharaj Parikshit is inquisitive because, despite his level of renunciation and realization and his determination to remain detached from material activities, he took to the householder ashram. And it's very interesting because it's mentioned right at the beginning of this, of the canto. Chapter. He was a Priyavrata Bhagavataha, a great devotee. This is the first verse of the chapter. Atma Arama Atmanaha. who takes pleasure in self-realization. Why? Grihe Ramata. Grihe Ramata. Put that in here. Yat Moolaha Kama Bandaha Parabhavaha. It's a very interesting, the first verse of this. Why did Maharaj Priyabrata, who was such a Bhagavata, Akmarama, self-satisfied devotee, right? Take to the Griha Ashram, the Griha Grihasta Ashram. And here it mentions Yatmulaha, the root cause of Karma Bandha, the bondage of fruitive activities. And here, Prabhupada says, Parabhavaha, the defeat of one's human mission. So, this is, and it's very interesting that we see this tension, if you like, this conflict, all sorts of conflict, potential tension in the relationship with Lord Brahma and the four Kumaras. Lord Brahma asked the four Kumaras to assist him in populating the creation. This is in the beginning of this manifestation of universal affairs. And then four Kumaras refused. They wanted to pursue their spiritual life. Of course, that made Lord Brahma quite angry. And there's constant sort of Shiva was born out of the anger of his father, Lord Brahma. And we see that tension in various places. Another famous sage, sadhu, bhagavata, Karadamuni, was an interesting personality in that he wanted to get married. He wanted it. But, and interestingly, he was so qualified from the performance of his meditation and his devotional service that Lord Vishnu appeared before him, such an elevated personality. But his desire was to get married, actually. And of course, he facilitated the whole universal creation. The propagation of various the filling up of the universe with progeny, having nine daughters, Kadamuni Devuti, nine daughters, and one son. Kapila Dev, and we've read about Kapila Dev's activities and his great qualities in the previous canto, canto 3, we're on 4 now, right?
5.
Oh, we're on 5, so that's me. Yes, it's canto 3, no? So the previous, not the previous, but the one before. So, Kardama Muni, but the interesting thing is that even though Kardama Muni wanted to enjoy the facilities of household life and get married, still he its determination was, at a certain point, to give up, not be attached, and pursue self-realization. It was very exalted and powerful yogi, Karunamurti. And very exalted and powerful, pure devotee, even though he was engaged in household life, he wasn't attached. And so he just left home. Of course, before he left home, after performing austerities and penances and his devotional practices for many years, the Lord appeared as his son. Right? So we see examples of very elevated personalities who avoid they're so advanced. They completely avoid that, the household ashram. And then there are those who enter into the household ashram, but understanding their spiritual identity and their spiritual nature, they're not entangled in that, in the activities of that ashram. Was much, the general purpose of the household ashram is to enjoy and suffer. This is and especially we see in the Kali Yuga, in the current age, just how degraded people are in the ashram. But in these descriptions, in these stories, in the Bhagavatam, we see how by following religious principles, even the Grihastha ashram can be a source of elevation and a source of liberation rather than a source of entanglement. This is really the verbal. So Maharaj Parikshit identifies this issue or this problem, because the Grihastha ashram can be a place of entanglement. It is. If one is not careful, then in the pursuit of sense gratification, one becomes attached. Right? And so, to that material enjoyment, effectively, that one becomes attached. And then that attachment to material enjoyment creates bondage, karma, and then aha. And what was in that verse? Grihe Ramata. Attachment to enjoying. Yamulaha Karma Bandanaha Palabhaha. The root of attachment and bondage and the destruction, the defeat of one's human mission. And when we see that in the modern age, people generally don't follow any religious principles. And so a really just a polished edition of the animals. Right? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and not much more than that. The real purpose and the mission of human life is to pursue self-realization. The human form of life gives us a great opportunity to
understand our spiritual identity. And not to just pursue sex gratification. We have conditions, we have conditional duties, or conditioned duties, in the sense that eating, sleeping, bathing, defending, these things are required. You know, you have to eat. If you don't eat, what happens? You die. If you don't sleep, what happens? You go crazy. Huh? Can't. Your intelligence will be weakened, you might not want to. There has to be some sense gratification. And defending, we have to, you know, we spend most of our lives buying a house. Most people, right? Buying a house is a major effort in people's life to protect, to defend from the hot, heat and cold. So eating, sleeping, bathing, and defending. This is what we have in common with the animals. You know, try explaining self-realization to a dog. Right? You tell your dog, you know, you're not the body, you're a spirit soul, but you just lick your nose to see, you know, whether you're going to be tasty or not to eat. So, you know, in animal species of life, there's basically absorption in these basic activities and no inquiry. There's not even the capacity to hear. Whereas in human form of life, what separates us from the animals is the ability to hear. And by gaining knowledge, especially spiritual knowledge, one is able to distinguish the difference between matter and spirit. That's the advantage of the human form of life. And of course, the recommendation by Kapila to Devamuti is that one see everybody from a spiritual perspective, see everybody equally. Right? This is one of goodness, is to be able to see everybody equally. Whereas in the bodily concept, we see everybody differently according to their body. That's what Prabhupada says. When you ask somebody, who are you? Then they just identify with the body. You know, I'm Mr. So-and-so, I'm in such and such a dress, and I'm a professor. You're a professor? Huh? Professor. Very insulted professor. Or, what's your occupation?
Devotee.
He's a devotee. Well, that's not a bad identification, I suppose. No. But it's related to the body, not to the spirit soul. And yet, without the spirit soul, what's the body? It's just a lump of matter. Right? If the example of Prabhupada is of a child that's stillborn, which is tragic, because all the features are there. It's got the limbs, it's got the fingers, the hands, the ears, the nose, the mouth, everything, eyes, all the bodily features are there, and nothing can be found to be wrong, but there's no spirit soul, so therefore it is just a lump of matter. And you can't, no matter what you do, you can inject, you know, you can electric, you know, you can give some stimulus or whatever, but you can't bring a dead body back to life. So the most important element is the spirit soul, not the material
facility, but the spiritual, without the presence of the soul, nothing. So the real purpose of life is to get to know oneself. This is the mission. And the problem with household life is that the pursuit of all of the responsibilities and all of the facilities can cloud one's colour, one's natural intelligence. So the pursuit of material things becomes more important than the pursuit of spiritual. And so therefore my personality is like the Chakushkumar, the four Kumaras, or here, Ida Maharaj Puri Radha, was to avoid it because it's such a dangerous situation. One can become entangled. But of course, you see, in the example of Karakrama Muni, he was inclined towards household life, but not at the expense of his spiritual life. So it's not an automatic disqualification in terms of spiritual life. If one is able to pursue the Grihastha Ashram and at the same time pursue one's spiritual, execute one's spiritual responsibilities, and it need not be a source of entanglement. And in fact, it can be part of spiritual pursuit, spiritual life. And so these stories, in one sense, because here we see it appears, this is why Maharaj Parikshit was curious, it appears that Maharaj Priyavrata was determined not to be entangled in the pursuit of household life. And that looked like the direction he was trying to take, so he was concerned because after the objectives, there wasn't anybody qualified to rule the universal affairs. This is very elevated, these are very elevated persons. And Lord Brahma knew the potency of Narada Muni. Powerful, Narada Muni is a powerful preacher. We see so many examples. There's the example of Nagari the hunter. Nagari was a hunter who took pleasure in half killing his prey because he enjoyed his suffering. Is a hard-hearted personality. Killing of animals is somebody who's merciless, right? Very, one who inflicts suffering on others willingly is hard-hearted. What's the word here? Sadhoya with compassion. But somebody who takes pleasure in killing others is without compassion, adhoya, right? Not with, but without compassion. Yet, in the association of Narada Muni, he was able to persuade Nagari that he should give up his occupational duty as a hunter, and hunter, what does hunter mean in Sanskrit? Hunter, interesting. Killer, right, isn't it? Hunter? Other hunter means the destroyer of the other demon. This is the name of Krishna, hunter, other hunter. And in English, hunter means killer. Isn't that interesting? Interesting. The two words are the same. Other hunter. The hunter. The Nirari, the hunter. The killer. And Nirari, not a very elevated personality, really. If you look at his behavior, he was addicted to killing, not only killing, but inflicting suffering on others. This is the level of his consciousness. Yet, by the association of Narayana, he gave it up and took the bhakti. This is the power of association. Narayana is very powerful. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sastra Koi, Lala Mantra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarana Siddhi Hoi. All city perfection, and we have it here, Kripa City. Prabhupada mentions Kripa City. By the association of a saintly person, one becomes perfect. And so, by the association of Narada Muni, Madhurya Hunter became a very great devotee. He was deeply concerned. Deeply concerned that if I break my bow, if I give up my means of livelihood, then who will look after me? It's my duty. And even in the Vedic scriptures, it's mentioned you have to perform your duty, not the duty of others. But Narayana said, "Don't worry." And it came to pass that Nagari became a devotee. He was trying to know Krishna and worshipping Tulsi and engaging in bhakti. And all of the local people, being so impressed by his devotion and by his renunciation, was a natural feature or characteristic of a devotee, that they were inspired to give him so many things. It's like we perform devotional service, we worship Raja Bhagavad, according to Bhagavad Gita, Sri Prabhupada, we execute, we perform the Sankirtan Chandra, and people give us an appreciation for the knowledge, the sharing of bhakti, people reciprocate. What is it? The dhati bhaktivina di guya makyati pichati bhukte bhojayate jaya sati pretty much. So, you know, we share the shadam, we share the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, kirtan, encourage others to elevate themselves, and people appreciate that and give. So the devotees give bhakti, and bhakti means an exchange of one gives in charity, one receives in charity, one reveals one's mind, one inquires, one offers prasadam, one takes prasadam. These are the symptoms of bhakti. And so, Narada Muni, by his bhakti shakti, if you like, inspired Mugrari. So Lord Brahma, who's also the father of Narayana, for that matter, was concerned. Because he wanted Priyavrata to take to the household of Ashram to help manage the universal affairs. And Narayana was going to preach to be through Manu Ranunciate. He'd already done that before, and so there was concern. The universal affairs, life needs to go on. And in such a way so that everybody would benefit. So Lord Brahma and Swayambhuvamanu, who was Priyavrata's father. And I think Swayambhuvamanu, is he the brother of Karudama Muni? Is that right? Lord Brahma knew the potency of Narada Muni's company, association, right? And so he wanted to encourage Maharaj Priyavrata to accept the household of life and to promise him that, you know, this is not a death sentence. It doesn't need to be a death. And we see that in Vedic culture, sense control, mind control, regulation gives rise to renunciation, gives rise to learning by performing the sadhana, the rules and regulations, especially the bhakti yoga. One learns and experiences detachment, that I'm not this body, that I'm a spirit soul, and that the urges, the pushings of the gross and subtle elements of the body, vata vegam, sukha vegam, jiva vegam, udara rasa vegam, there's so many urges or pushes that come from having an material body that these, by regulation and by sravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, on occasion of the nine practices of bhakti, that one can experience a higher taste and realize that that's not the body, that these pushings are superfluous and can be controlled by attachment, and even as a householder, even as a householder, that the householder ashram can be as a beneficial rather than a karma bandhana and parabara, the destruction or the obstacles in the pursuit of the mission of life, which is a day of self-realization. And it's very interesting in this day and age, most people will be householders, that's the reality. But they can be, and it's very interesting because there was tension between Śrīla Prabhupāda, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupāda, and his godbrothers. And one of the reasons why his godbrothers criticized him so strongly was because he allowed women to live in ashrams, in temples. Right? Of course, you know, men and women were separated. Right? But this was considered to be highly degraded by his godbrothers. They thought that that this was a travesty. That this was that serious spiritual life could not be pursued in that environment, and that it was a source of degradation. And they criticized Prabhupada for that. Prabhupada was discouraged. He felt that, the activities of ISKCON, despite the risk, there are risks, certainly, but despite the risks, the results of his preaching were testimony to the efficacy, the effectiveness of his preaching strategy. He'd gone to the West, he surveyed the situation, he could see that mingling, the intermingling of genders within society was common. That was the common, in India, culture maybe, Vedic culture maybe somewhat, some elements intact, some elements. And we see how Srila Prabhupada was very proud of his household of disciples. This is a story, it was Maharaj's birthday yesterday, or it was the day, I think yesterday. And there's a very nice story of how, and she would cook for Srila Prabhupada when he was in Mayapur. She had daughters, she had a husband, and she had the service of cooking for Srila Prabhupada. And in very trying, difficult circumstances, there was no long building, and Prabhupada just lived in a hut. And maybe the long building had been, not the long building, the lotus building had been built by then. But I don't think so. It was, the rudimentary beginnings of Islam Mayapur, which is like a huge establishment now, but then in those days, it's just a few buildings. And she had to get money from the treasurer, whose job was to give nobody money to buy the boat out, plus the austere conditions, to cook in, no kitchen, and so forth. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada had invited all of his godbrothers to come for lunch on this particular occasion. And Mahavir was very embarrassed by, it was a struggle. And she explains how Prabhupada would always be criticizing her. But in the sense that she was always inquiring from him how she could improve, how she could do things better. So, there was this dynamic of Prabhupada being the authoritative teacher, the guru, in fact, and giving her advice on how she could improve her cooking, and she was meditating, how can I improve, how can I, in the difficult, very difficult circumstances. So then she was caught in a situation where she was cooking for her spiritual master, for whom she had great affection, but her, she knew that his godbrothers were very critical.
And she offered to somebody else to serve. Prabhupada said, no, I want you to serve. So she served. And then in the midst of his God brothers, he said, she is cooking for me. But she will slit her throat for me, and I will slit mine for her. The Prabhupada made this announcement. And then Mahati, of course, realized how much, even though Prabhupada was criticizing her and telling her what to do, acting as the guru, still he had great affection and appreciation for what his disciples had done. And especially Mahati and Shamsundar and Mukunda and Janaki and Jamuna and Gurudas, they had gone to London on Prabhupada's order, and they had established a Radha Krishna temple in London. And this was a feat that his sannyasi god brothers had attempted, but they were unsuccessful. Well, they might have established a little bit of a mission, but eventually they folded and had to come back to India. And at great cost to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, Thakur was going to pay for the whole thing. But here, the Prabhupada and his household of disciples, he was being criticized for engaging women and men and creating a situation of degradation. This was a mood of the Gaudiya Math. They thought, why are you creating this dangerous situation? And we can see that somewhat in this tension between the householders and the renunciates. And it's a thing that permeates all of much of there was a situation, I think about it, when the sannyasis were basically stealing brahmacharis from the temples and encouraged them to go on book distribution on travel sankirtan. And the Radhadharma sankirtan party was distributing lots of books and making devotees do it, so Prabhupada was very proud of their efforts and their achievements. But when the temple presidents, who were predominantly householders, came to Srila Prabhupada and complained specifically about Krishnas, and that they were stealing the brahmacharis from temples and making it very difficult to manage temples, right? And Prabhupada threatened to Tanaka Krishna, which I think I should send you to China. Because the sannyasis became too enthusiastic. And weren't seeing things from the point of balance. And so it's interesting here, Lord Brahma comes, to maintain some sort of equilibrium. Because yes, as is mentioned in the beginning of the chapter, the household of ashram is dangerous. But it's not the end if pursued according to the same principles applied to the renunciates. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on the Upadeshamrita, he mentions that there are instructions for renunciates. Or in other words, there's two types of instructions. There are instructions for renunciates and instructions for householders. But he says, but these instructions in the Upadeshamrita are good for everybody. Because the process of bhakti applied appropriately in all ashrams,
Brahmachari, Grihastha, Anubhastha, Sannyas. Elevate one to the transcendental, to the transcendental platform. Even, and we should take the example of Kalana Muni as an example. Even though he was engaged in household ashram, he was given the benediction, you will eventually, Lord Vishnu says, I will become your son. Right? And then you will then again take the renounced order of life. And so the position is that in a household of ashram, when things pursue or engage in that ashram, follow the principles of bhakti, which are recommended by Rupa Goswami and, you know, Srila Prabhupada, our predecessor, Acharyas. And we see that Srila Prabhupada had great faith in that order, those instructions. Yes, it is dangerous, and people do fall down. But, as I said in the beginning of this chapter, and this whole episode of Maharaj's Priyavrata's pastimes and activities illustrates how, even if one is situated in the household of ashram, if one pursues the principles of bhakti, one can transcend it. Right? It's not that it's a lifelong sentence. And Srila Prabhupada had faith in it. Yes, he knew dangers. His disciples fell down, ran off with women, took the money, you know, things didn't go perfectly. But Srila Prabhupada didn't ever lose faith in, if you follow the process, right? If you follow the process of bhakti, then you can transcend even the grossest of material, you know, pursuits or attraction to material affairs, which is natural, right? This is natural. And that's why Guru Goswami starts off the Upadeshamrita, Vato Vedi Urshu Speak, Vato Vedi Manasapura, the mind's pushing, the pushing of anger. You know, when you can't get what you want, you get angry. Udaravasa Vedi, Jiva Vedi, Udaravasa, the pushing of the tongue. The tongue is the greatest enemy. Or shall we say, the tongue can be a formidable source of pushings, right? The urge to speak and the urge to eat. Double trouble comes from the tongue, right? You know, when Srila Prabhupada was in Mayapur, Sri Kirti tells the story. When Prabhupada was in Mayapur, in the hut, which is now the Vajra Kuti, there were two rooms in the hut. And Prabhupada stayed on one side and the other devotees stayed on the other. There was a man, who knows where Balaji was. Right? the devotees came together. A few devotees that were there, they would talk. And Srila Prabhupada would complain, Srila Kirti, would you tell them to stop talking? You know, just gossiping. And Prabhupada said, you know, this gossip will destroy their Krishna consciousness. And you know, you see that now graphically on mediums like Facebook. Prabhupada didn't want the devotees to get a teletype machine. Teletype it was used by the book trust, the Prabhupada's book trust, to communicate with the printers and so forth. That was, that was a big breakthrough. A breakthrough of the 60s was a teletype machine, a communications device. Not to speak of, you know, Facebook and YouTube, whatever, and you see how much the gossiping propensity is destroying people's Christian consciousness. All they do is talk about, you know, the hoax of COVID-19, and on and on and on they go, and very little Christian guitar. Very little. And Prabhupada said to Sri Vijayji, this gossiping destroys Christian consciousness. Right? What is it? Atyahara prayasascha prajopa. Atyahara prayasascha prajopa niyamahagraha. Buddha Goswami's instructions. Upadesha is a very, very critical, essential book in one sense, because this is very, very basic instructions. So Prabhupada said this really, you tell them to stop talking, they're just gossiping. Prabhupada didn't like it. But very difficult for the Buddha. They were coming from different parts of the planet and the meeting, and so they were talking about things. What's going on? This is just a natural propensity to gossip. The Prabhupada didn't like it. The Grihastha Ashram is, yes, a dangerous place if it's just used for the pursuit of sense gratification. But if the basis of that ashram is dharma or religious principles, and the height or the topmost religious principles are evident or are manifest in the principles of bhakti, then one can remain aloof from the temptations of just a mundane material existence and can pursue spiritual life, and even in the household of ashram, be detached. And that's why Upadesha Marita is important. The negative instruction is important because the basic principles of surrender, which is, in the beginning, accept that which is favorable, reject that which is unfavorable. This is very important. Accept the principles of bhakti. Tat-tat-kama means, pursue the activities of bhakti that support and maintain a spiritual identification. A spiritual practice supports self-realization and bhakti. Bhakti-nata-ku describes how, accepting that which is favorable, rejecting that which is unfavorable is not bhakti in and of itself, but it is a support. It enables us to enter into the realm of bhakti. So this acceptance and rejection, acceptance of things positive, even the household of ashram, and avoid the reject that which is unfavorable. So it's discrimination. The power of discrimination is required. And that comes in the association of the devotees. And in this particular case, Lord Brahma wanted to balance, the instructions of Narayana, which is pretty much just give up everything and dedicate yourself fully to spiritual life, which is good also. But not practical in this day and age. Right? This is nothing. Prabhupada could see that most of these householders, disciples, needed to be married, because living as renunciates, that would not work over. That would be troubled by Raja. And this is what Raja Goswami teaches. He teaches Yukta by Raja. Even in the household of Ashram, despite
it's the temptations and the obstacles that it might place in the path of one's progressive devotional service. Still, it's the ashram that most people need to be in order to be properly purified and free from that attachment. And so there is this balance, and here Lord Brahma wanted to see, and of course Lord Brahma is coming as the grandfather. I'm not interested in the grandfather, has great affection for the grandson. But there was a battle of the rules here, if you like. Who's going to be, as it turns out, Priyavrata was obedient and amenable to the encouragement of his grandfather. You know, the grandfather can't see any wrong in the behaviour of the grandson, and so encourages him. Always, like my mother always used to encourage me, even though I was a bit of a black sheep of the family. My grandma never, she always treated me with love and affection. Always. Never got on my case. Well, my parents always said, do this, do that, do the other thing, and I said, yeah, we're giving me a break. I knew I could always go to my grandma's place, and all she would do is give me love and affection. Not that my parents were affectionate, but, you know, they were all seeing my case. Get a haircut, mow the lawn, wash the car, you know, do stuff like that. Because this was going wrong. After I dropped out of uni, it was basically a bit of no hope. But my grandmother was very affectionate. I knew, you know, my only decent meal of the week was to go visit my grandmother. But because she showed me that affection, I would always see her. So, you know, grandparents, they can always give the children back to the parents, you see, so they don't have to worry about all the nonsense they came up to. They just show them love and affection. But then influence, with that love and affection comes influence and power, if you like. So Lord Brahma knew that. He knew that. And so he Prabhupada says, my dear Priyavrata, you have decided not to accept household life, but I have decided to convince you that you must. But of course, Maharaj Priyavrata was promised, you will not be degraded by this ashram. So long as one takes to the principles of bhakti, ultimately, devotional service, even though one may be in this situation of temptation, if you like, you know, that's always there, even the brahmacharis. Vajra-vega, nasa-vega, all the pushings are always going to be there. Right? But if one follows regulated principles. And so the guidelines are there. Then, you know, Vishayadhi Vakante, Nidahasya, we have a material body, there will be pushings. That's a given. But by the practice of bhakti, one will get a higher taste. Rasa-vara-chara-vara-sopra-sopra-sopra-sopra-param. Vishva Nivartate, one doesn't buy. And so the effort must be in our sadhana. And because we see that, this is a feature, discussing this with Chitra last night, it's a feature of, you know, a feature of Western culture is, you know, do what you want to do, be what you want to be, do what you like, right? No control. But Vedic culture is different. It's control the mind, control the senses, live a regulated life.
There is no, you know, we see in the pursuit of sense gratification in modern circle, modern civilization, what do we see? Mental health problems, depression, anxiety, you know, suicide, whatever. Interesting statistic, you know, they say that because we're all, you know, stuck at home and whatever, that suicide, you know, mental health will diminish. And of course, it has in many respects, but suicide has an increase, actually. Interesting statistic. Of course, there are those who tell us that none of the statistics are true, it's all lies, so that's another rabbit hole you can go down and get lost in. You know, we see generally speaking, in the pursuit of sex gratification, and in the realm of, you know, be your own person, do your own thing, which is nobody's happy. Right? Whereas in Vedic culture, there's a consideration, consideration of, you know, how to benefit yourself effectively, and how to be of benefit to others. You know, this is really the concern. And of course, that's Lord Brahma's concern. We need to manage universal affairs for the benefit of everybody, right? And we need kings and leaders who are examples of self-satisfaction. Self-satisfaction based on self-control, sense-control, positive engagement of the mind, the senses in relational activities. Not that, you know, and that's good for the householders as it is for the renunciates. Right? Good for both. And in that environment, then we have a peaceful society. We have the renunciates, they're setting their example, and we have also the householders who are also like renunciates. There's the opportunity for some social interaction and social engagement and social enjoyment, if you like. But based on the principles of bhakti, that's allowed. And it's elevated, not degrading. Right? This is the point. Right? So Maharaj Priyavrata was promised by Brahma that you will not fall down. Right? And in the beginning of this chapter, Prabhupada explains how for his devotee there is no fall down. Even if it appears that the devotee has fallen into some difficulty or some, you know, he's weakened in his bhakti practice, still is not lost. Not lost. Very interesting point. That's in sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So Maharaj Priyavrata, very elevated personality. But just because he takes it as an ashram, an ashram, and practices as a Raja Rishi, I guess you could say, right, then he's not degraded. Which is why Sri Prabhupada respected his household of disciples. Right? Respected the women and engaged and encouraged the women. Criticized by his own brothers, the Prabhupada saw that in the context of his preaching mission. In fact, Prabhupada said, this was my genius. By making this decision, Prabhupada says, I was successful. Very interesting, Prabhupada says, this was my success. His own brother said it was his failure. But actually, Prabhupada says, this was my success. Right? Engaging everybody. We're only for renunciates. Well, that's only a small portion of society. And you can see, Prabhupada's vision was to engage everyone. And he was able to do it. He did it. Whereas his grandmothers criticized him. And they weren't able to do it. Interesting situation. And of course, they were all, in many respects, they were well-meaning and very advanced devotees in many aspects of their sadhana, with the philosophical understanding, and very, very nice devotees. But as Prabhupada says, the proof is in, well, Prabhupada didn't perhaps say this, but I'm going to say it, the proof is in the pudding. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Anybody have any comments or questions at 10 past 9 in 108?
In previous cantos, in previous cantos, you know, starting
previous
with Prabhupada,
previous
Swayambhamuno, Uttanapada, then we heard about of course Prachyadas, then Prachyadas son is Daksha. Then suddenly now we come to Priyavrata. Is it because there was no, you know, continuation of this lineage from Daksha?
Could be, yeah. I think so. I think that's the case. Well, I haven't. I was just looking at it last night, so I'm not up on it. But I'm listening to Krishna Dharma's retelling of the Bhagavatam. And so, you know, you get a bit of an overview. When we study the Bhagavatam verse by verse, we sometimes miss the overall plan of things, the scheme of things, right? And the connections between all of these. And so we, by hearing Krishnadharma's rendition of the Bhagavatam, he tends to tie some of these elements together. The Bhagavatam, the Puranas, deal with, you know, the manifestation of the creation and the history of various lineages. And especially in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's these descriptions of very, very saintly devotional kings, right? Rulers of the whole universe. And, you know, there's sometimes the struggles to keep things going, and they become so advanced that they detach themselves from everything, and then the universal affairs get neglected. So, yeah, we're back to Priyavrata. Very interesting story. Vivek, what's your question?
Yeah. In the translation, Prabhupada writes, Brahma descended to Bhulok. So,
yes, yeah, Bhulok.
Bhulok is this planet, right?
The middle planetary systems, yes.
So, not just this planet?
Quite likely that's what it would be, yes. But see, not necessarily, because when we hear Maharaj Priyavrata's activities, Bhūloka in this case seems to indicate planetary systems, not just this planet, but more than the Earth planet, but on this plane. Yeah. Yes, that's an interesting topic.
Because this, I just wanted to know where this hill was, this Gandhaman hill. Is it on this planet? Or is it?
Where is it? You want to go there?
No, that's
right. Well, you have to do some research and find out. Yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, this is the only, you can find out in here. The indication is yes, right? But again, the descriptions of the universe as perceived by these great personalities sometimes doesn't match ours. Or shall we say ours doesn't match their experience. That doesn't mean it's not the same place, it's just our perception of it is very different. Right? We're dealing with, you know, elevated personalities who are practically like demigods. And so their perception and their experience of the universe is different to ours. We just very, you know, insignificant, poorly equipped, conditioned souls. I didn't get to talk about Kripasiddha and Sanasiddha. I wanted to talk about that, but anyway, didn't get to that point. All right, thank you. Congratulations on both time, Peter.
Yeah.